बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare Krishna Balaram, Jaya Krishna Balaram, Krishna Balaram, Jaya Krishna Balaram. Jaya Radha Shyam Sundara, Radha Shyam Sundara. Gauranitai Jaya Gauranitai Gauranitai Jaya Gauranitai Jaya Narsingadev Jaya Narsingadev Narsingadev Jaya Narsingadev And then Shukadev Goswami is asked by Maharaj Parikshit that the Supreme Lord is supposed to be neutral. He should not take sides. Why is it that he takes sides of the devotees, the demigods, and he helps to destroy the demons? We can expect this kind of partial behavior from ordinary people of this world, but we shouldn't expect the Supreme Personality of Godhead to behave in this way. So Shukadev Goswami began by explaining that there is no partiality on account of the Lord. Actually, who is partial? A person who is under the clutches of the three modes of nature is partial. A person who is materially conditioned thinks in duality. This person is my friend, this person is my enemy. And therefore, ordinary people, they favor their friends and they do not favor their enemies, or whom they perceive as their enemies. But the Supreme Lord is not under the three modes of nature. In fact, the three modes of nature are working under him. He is always transcendental. Therefore, there is no question of the Supreme Lord being partial. And in any case, because both the demons and the demigods are themselves under the three modes of nature, the demons being under the power of the mode of passion predominantly, and the demigods and the sages being under the control of the mode of goodness predominantly, sometimes whichever mode is prominent at a particular point in time, the demons or the demigods become powerful. When the mode of goodness is strong, the demigods become powerful. They attain victory. When the modes of passion are strong, the demoniacs become powerful and they attain victory. And these modes are constantly fluctuating. Sometimes the mode of goodness is superior, sometimes the mode of passion is strong. So these things go on, and accordingly sometimes the demons are victorious and sometimes the demigods are victorious. So the Supreme Lord is not to be held responsible for this. And in this connection, Shukadev Goswami narrated a conversation that took place between Yudhishthir Maharaj and Narad Muni. Yudhishthir Maharaj was present at the Rajasuya, had organized the Rajasuya Yajna, and Krishna was also present there. He had the most prominent position there. And when Shishupal began to abuse Lord Krishna continuously for a long time, finally Lord Krishna used his disc, the Sudarshan Chakra, and beheaded Shishupal. And in front of everybody's eyes, Shishupal's soul, it left his body and traveled to Krishna and entered into Krishna's body. Everyone was thoroughly surprised to see this. So Yudhishthira Maharaj, who had seen this himself, asked Narad Muni later, "O great sage, how do I understand this incident? We know that those who get liberation, even if it's impersonal liberation, are usually sages of very pure character, who have performed a lot of austerities, vows, followed religious principles. And here we see that Shishupal, he was such an avowed enemy of the Lord, and from childhood he was blaspheming Krishna. And the reward he got for his continuous blasphemy is that he was liberated. He entered into Krishna's body. So entering into the Lord's body is one variety of the impersonal liberation. There are two types of Sayujya Mukti or impersonal liberation. In one, the jiva merges into the impersonal Brahma Jyoti, the impersonal effulgence of the Lord. In the second kind of impersonal liberation, the jiva merges into the body of the Lord.
So Shishupal apparently merged into the divine body of Lord Krishna. So Yudhishthir Maharaj wanted to know. Of course, it's a long explanation by Srila Narad Muni. But Narad Muni explained that because the Lord is transcendental, whatever connection that you establish with Him directly, whether of fear or envy or love or service, brings you to the transcendental position eventually. Everyone is purified by coming in contact with the Lord, regardless of which way that person comes in contact with the Lord, whether positively or negatively, in devotion or without devotion. So because Shishupal connected with Krishna in envy and hatred, he was still purified by Krishna at the end of it. So because Krishna is absolute, when Krishna killed Shishupal, he actually bestowed his mercy upon him. He delivered Shishupal. So the question came up about who was Shishupal, and then Narad Muni explained the history. He said that Jay and Vijay were two doorkeepers of Vaikuntha, and because of the Lord's arrangement, externally because they were cursed by the four Kumaras, they had to take birth in the material world. Their first birth was as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. The next birth was of Ravan and Kumbhakarna. And their third birth, they appeared as Shishupal and Dantavakra. Hiranyaksha was killed by the Lord as Varahadev, and Hiranyakashipu became outraged, and he took upon himself the task of destroying the civilization here. And he wanted to avenge the death of his brother by trying to kill Vishnu. And because his son Prahlad became a devotee, so he tortured him very cruelly. After narrating the history, so Narad Muni had answered Yudhishthir Maharaj's question about the apparent partiality of the Supreme Lord. So now Yudhishthir Maharaj didn't have a question about this because he had received his answer. But now he wanted to know about why Hiranyakashipu tortured Prahlad. The subject took a different turn now, because whatever question that Yudhishthir Maharaj had posed to Narad Muni had now been answered. But in the course of the answer, there was a casual mention of Hiranyakashipu torturing Prahlad. So Yudhishthir Maharaj was really curious to know that Prahlad, we have heard, was an exalted devotee, was just a 5-year-old child. Generally parents are very affectionate to their young children. And I heard that Prahlad was endowed with all wonderful qualities. And why would a father torture in so many different ways his own beloved child? And then Narad Muni began the narration that goes on for many, many chapters in the Srimad Bhagavatam. In response to Yudhishthir Maharaj's question of why Hiranyakashipu tortured Prahlad. So that's the background. So the whole discussion began by narrating the activities of Hiranyakashipu, and then in the fourth chapter, Narad Muni glorifies the divine qualities of Prahlad Maharaj. So the question arises, then why in the scriptures and why in the discussions that devotees have amongst themselves is so much time spent on glorifying devotees, whether it's Prahlad Maharaj or any other great devotee? Why do we glorify the devotees? And now we are very close to the holy day of Narasimha Chaturdashi, the appearance day of Lord Narasimhadev. So we should be talking about Lord Narasimhadev. Why are we talking about Prahlad Maharaj? So the answer is that glorifying Prahlad Maharaj is also glorification of Narasimhadev. Glorification of the servant is glorification of the master. The two are inseparable. Because the devotee exists for the Lord and the Lord exists for the devotee, so the two cannot be separated. The Lord actually is more pleased when his devotee is glorified than when he himself is glorified. The Lord, of course, being transcendental, doesn't seek glorification in the sense that the materially conditioned people of the world seek their own glorification. A conditioned living entity loves to hear his prayers, his praises, because it feeds his false ego, makes him feel nice. But Krishna has no conception of false ego. Whatever glorification the devotees do of Krishna is factual, and what is more, it is inadequate. Because Krishna is so great that no amount of glorification of Krishna is sufficient. So Krishna is pleased when his devotee is glorified. It is only the devotees who can factually glorify Krishna. In the Srimad Bhagavatam it is said, Nivritta Tarshay Rupagiya Manat Bhavau Shadash Shrotra Manobhiramat Ka Uttama Shloka Gunanu Vadat Puman Virajyeta Vina Pashupnat. It is said that who will not glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead except one who is a cruel person, who is a killer of animals, a Pashupna. Only a hard-hearted person will not glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. Or, if there is somebody who has a thirst for enjoying this material world, he also will not be able to glorify Krishna. But a person who is no longer interested in enjoying this material world, he will take interest in glorifying the Supreme Lord. So such a person is called Nivritta Tarshi. He is one whose Krishna or thirst for enjoying this world is Nivritta, is finished. So he no longer seeks to enjoy this world. Therefore he takes interest in glorifying the Supreme Lord. Upagiyamanat means to properly glorify. And Srila Prabhupada translates this as glorification of the Lord is appropriately or properly performed in the disciplic succession of devotees. So properly speaking, the glorification of the Lord can be done only by the pure devotees of the Lord like Prahlad Maharaj. We can simply repeat the glories of Prahlad Maharaj and repeat the prayers in which Prahlad glorifies the Supreme Lord. And such glorification is bhava aushadaj. It is the proper medicine for the disease of material existence. Shrotra manah abhiramat. And this is a very pleasing medicine. There are some medicines that we take which are bitter. But this medicine of Krishna consciousness is very pleasing to the mind, to the ears, to the senses. So who will not therefore glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead? So it needs a devotee to glorify Krishna. Only a devotee understands, others do not understand. In the Srimad Bhagavatam it is also said, Atra sarga visargascha sthanam poshanam utayaha manvantareshanu katha nirodha mukti ashrayaha. It gives the 10 subject matters of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Shukadev Goswami has covered all these 10 topics. We won't go into the details of these 10 topics, but it begins with sarga, the creation of Mahavishnu, this sarga, the creation of Brahma within each universe, and so on, till it comes to the last topic, which is ashraya. Ashraya refers to Sri Krishna, who is the ultimate and complete shelter of all the nine earlier mentioned principles. He is a shelter of everything. He is the ultimate principle of all existence. He is the root of all existence. So Krishna is the ashraya tattva, the principle of shelter, ultimate refuge for everything. But when it comes to bhakti or devotional service, then Krishna is not the ultimate principle. Then it is not Krishna who is ashraya. Then Krishna becomes vishaya. Vishaya means the object of service or glorification, of love. So who is the ashraya of that bhakti? Who is the shelter or the receptacle or the reservoir of that pure devotion? That is the devotee. So Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu explains that because the devotee is a reservoir, the ocean of devotion, therefore it is necessary to glorify the devotee. In fact, Srila Rupa Goswami points out that to understand the characteristics of pure devotional service, it is necessary to do it through the medium of the pure devotees of the Lord. Glorifying the pure devotees of the Lord is an unavoidable and essential point if one wants to understand the characteristics of pure devotional service, of bhakti. In other words, one cannot understand what pure bhakti is unless one studies deeply the life, the teachings, the character, etc. of the great devotees of the Lord, like Prahlad Maharaj. In the Shastras there is a verse, Tarko apratishtha shrutayo vibhinna nasa vrishiryasya matanna bhinnam. Mahajano yena katahasa pantha dharmasya tattvam nihitam guhayam. One cannot understand the ultimate religious principles. One cannot understand ultimate knowledge by simply reading the books or by arguments amongst each other. Real religious principles, real truth, real knowledge resides in the hearts of the Mahatmas, the great souls, the great devotees of the Lord. Therefore one has to follow in the footsteps of the great devotees, Mahajano yena gatah sapantha. And Prahlad Maharaj is one of the 12 devotees of the Lord. Swayambhu Narada Shambhu Kumara Kapilo Manu Prahladho Janako Bhishmo Bali Vayasaki Vayam. So Yamaraj is himself speaking in the 6th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and he mentions that these 12 personalities actually understand real religious principles, and therefore they are called Mahajans. Swayambhu refers to Brahma because he was self-born. Narad is Brahma's son. Shambhu is Lord Shiva. Kumara refers to the 4 Kumaras. Kapila refers to Lord Kapila, the incarnation of the Lord. Manu refers to the son of Brahma, Swayambhuva Manu. Then there is Prahlad, Janak. There is Bhishma Dev. There is Bali Maharaj. There is Vayasaki, which means Shukadev Goswami. And then Yamaraj himself. So these are the Mahajans. Madhvacharya commenting on this, and Srila Prabhupada quotes Madhvacharya's comment, that among these 12 Mahajans, Prahlad is the best. So when the scriptures advise us, Mahajana yena gatah sapantha, that follow in the footsteps of the great Mahajan, we must try to understand what is their heart, how they have lived, how they thought, how they spoke, what was the nature of their devotion to the Supreme Lord. Then the principles of pure devotional service become very clear. Ahituki avyavihita ya bhakti purushottame. This is Lord Kapila's definition. Bhakti to the Supreme Lord should be ahituki and avyavahita. It should be without any material motive, and also it should be without cessation, without interruption. And what is the nature or the characteristic of this bhakti? And Kapila Dev says, Salokya Sarshi Samipya Sarupyaikatvam Apyuta Diyamanam Na Grihananti Vina Mat Sevanam Jana. Kapila Dev explains to his mother the characteristic of the devotees. He says, my devotees don't desire anything from me. What they speak of material benediction, they do not even desire the five types of liberation. Salokya means residing on the same planet as the Lord. Sarshi means having equal opulences as the Lord. Samipya means to become a personal associate of the Lord, to be very close to the Lord. Sarupya means to have the same form as the Lord. And Sayujya or Ekatva means to merge into the Lord. Of course, the devotees will never want the fifth type of liberation, Sayujya or Ekatva, but they do not even desire the first four kinds of liberation, which from one point of view are legitimate for a devotee. It's not prohibited, because ultimately a devotee will get one of these four kinds of liberation or more. But Kapila Dev says, such is the nature of pure devotional service that the pure devotees do not desire any of these things, any of these five types of liberation. So through this, Rupa Goswami explains in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that by glorifying the devotees of Krishna, the pure devotees, the principles of bhakti are brought out. Prahlad Maharaj also did not want liberation. The Lord actually tried to allure him and tempt him. After the Lord advented as Lord Narasimha Dev and he killed Hiranyakashipu and his entire demoniac army, and he sat on the throne and the demigods were afraid to come in front of the Lord, they sent Prahlad. Prahlad went up. Immediately the Lord's anger subsided. He took Prahlad in his lap and fondled him. In one of the Puranas it is explained that there was such a dramatic transformation in the Lord's nature. At one moment he was roaring in such a fearful way that even the demigods were afraid to come forward. But when Prahlad came forward, he was overwhelmed with affection for Prahlad. He brought him on his lap and began to stroke his head with his lotus hands, and he was rocking back and forth himself. And then after Prahlad glorified Lord Narasimhadev, then Narasimhadev said to Prahlad Maharaj that I will offer you any benediction you like. So please ask anything from me. But Prahlad Maharaj did not. He did not want to ask anything from the Lord, not even liberation. This is the glory of Prahlad Maharaj. Even though the Lord tempted him, allured him, not once, but several times, Prahlad Maharaj did not succumb to that temptation. So therefore, by understanding this nature of pure devotees like Prahlad Maharaj, we can understand what pure devotional service really is. So in any case, this is another point of why we glorify the pure devotees of the Lord, because through their lives, actually bhakti is brought out. The principles of bhakti are illustrated or exhibited. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami also defines bhakti. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karmadhyanavritam anukolyena krishnanushilanam bhakti uttama. He defines the topmost bhakti, uttama bhakti. And then he defines each of the words. Srila Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, has gone in depth in analyzing each of the words of this definition. And when they analyze the word Krishna, Krishna Anushilanam Bhakti Uttama, that one must favorably serve Krishna. In analyzing the word Krishna, Jiva Goswami says that it's not only Krishna. The word Krishna refers to Krishna. It also refers to all the expansions and incarnations of Krishna, and there are innumerable of them. And it also refers to the pure devotees of Krishna, and it also refers to all things connected with Krishna, like His holy abode, His holy name, and so on. Tadiya Seva. So all things connected to Krishna, specifically Krishna's pure devotees. So when we say we must glorify Krishna, the acharyas have defined the word Krishna to include the pure devotees. So therefore when we glorify Krishna, we must also glorify the pure devotees of the Lord. This is another interesting aspect. Jiva Goswami says if that is not so, then all the different injunctions of the scriptures like Guru Padashraya, taking shelter of the spiritual master, accepting initiation from him, and all these principles that are laid out in the scriptures will not have any meaning. So therefore glorifying Krishna means glorifying the pure devotees of the Lord. In this way, we understand that glorifying Prahlad Maharaj is also glorifying Narsingadev. When Prahlad Maharaj was in difficulty, he remembered the Supreme Lord. He did not even for a moment forget the Supreme Lord despite the greatest difficulties. That is why the Lord was so indebted to him that he personally glorified him as the best devotee. In fact, in the 10th chapter of the 7th canto, Lord Narasimhadev himself, after he has heard Prahlad's prayers and Prahlad has declined the temptations offered by the Lord, the Lord says, Bhavanti Purusha Loke Mad bhakta sam anubratah bhavan me khalu bhakta nam sarvesham pratirupatrik. The Lord says, my dear Prahlad, those who follow your example will surely become my pure devotees. Bhavanti mad bhakta tvam anubratahi purushaloke. Anubratahi means one who follows in your footsteps. Anubrata, to do as somebody else is doing. Tvam, Purusha Loke, all the people in this world follow your footsteps, live the kind of life that you live, bhavanti mad bhakta, then they will also become my devotees. Bhavan me khalu bhakta nam sarvesham pratirupatrik. So the Lord Himself is glorifying Prahlad as the best devotee. My dear Prahlad, you are the best example of my devotee. And anyone who follows in your footsteps will also become my devotee. So what greater certificate can one have? the Lord Himself glorifies Prahlad as being the best devotee. Narad Muni in the 4th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, also extensively glorifies Prahlad Maharaj. In fact, these verses we will discuss tomorrow. It is normal, natural, expected of a disciple to glorify the spiritual master. The disciple, out of affection, gratitude, respect, obedience to the injunctions of the scripture and so on, will glorify the spiritual master. So it is not surprising if disciples glorify their spiritual master. But when a spiritual master unceasingly goes on glorifying a disciple, then that is something noteworthy. And especially when the spiritual master is Narad Muni, who himself is a perfected soul, one of the 12 Mahajans, and if he glorifies his disciple Prahlad Maharaj, then we can understand that Prahlad is truly an exceptional devotee. When Hiranyakashipu was terrorizing the universe, the demigods were greatly frustrated and disturbed. Finally, after having wreaked havoc all over the universe, Hiranyakashipu decided to go and perform austerities in the Mandarachal hill. And taking advantage of his absence from the kingdom, the demigods attacked the kingdom of Hiranyakashipu. They defeated the army and they also captured the queen of Hiranyakashipu, whose name was Kayadhu, and who was at that time pregnant with Prahlad in her womb. When Indra wanted to harm Kayadhu, Narad Muni arrived and said, "No, you should not do that, because in her womb is a great devotee of the Lord with exceptional prowess. So you will not be able to kill him. On the contrary, it will be a great sin, an offense on your part to do it." So because this was Narad Muni speaking, Indradev accepted. He circumambulated Kayadhu and he departed. Narad Muni took Kayadhu to his ashram and kept her there in security for a long time. Kayadhu asked for a benediction from Narad Muni that the child in her womb would not be born till her husband returned from the forest after completing his penance. And Narad Muni granted that benediction. Narad Muni understood the glories of the child in her womb, so he decided to teach Srimad Bhagavatam to the child. But the child was inside the womb, so externally he was speaking to the mother. And this is being narrated by Prahlad to his friends much later, when the friends ask Prahlad that you are talking about devotional service and you say you've learned this from your guru, but our gurus are Shanda and Amarka, and they have taught us political science and economics and all sorts of diplomacy and cheating and everything, but they haven't taught us devotional service. So which guru are you speaking about? At that time Prahlad mentioned this historical incident. And then he told his friends that both of us, that is my mother and myself, we heard Narad Muni reciting the glories of the Lord, the Srimad Bhagavatam. But even though my mother heard, she was mentally preoccupied with thoughts of my welfare, what will happen to my son. She was anxious about her husband being away. So therefore, even though she heard the Srimad Bhagavatam, she forgot. But I remembered. So now I'm instructing you, my dear friends, in this sublime message that I heard from my spiritual master, the great devotee Narad Muni. So this is how Narad Muni became the spiritual master of Prahlad. So in the fourth chapter of the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Narad Muni greatly glorifies Prahlad Maharaj. So definitely we can understand that this is a true tribute. If somebody's spiritual master glorifies the disciple, we can understand, yes, this is really a good disciple. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita of Sanatana Goswami, in the first part, there is the episode of Narad Muni trying to find out or ascertain who the best devotee is. And Sanatana Goswami takes Narad Muni on a wonderful journey of discovery. Initially, Narad Muni talks to a Brahmana, then a king in South India, then to Indra, then Brahma, and to each he goes and glorifies their devotional service. He glorifies them as being great devotees, and each of them directs Narad Muni to somebody else whom they say is better than me. You're glorifying me as a good devotee, but I am nothing. I don't know anything about devotional service. But if you really want to see a devotee, go to this person. So they each direct Narad Muni to somebody else whom they say is better than them. So Narad Muni moves from this Brahmana to the king in South India, going on to Indra, who directs him to Brahma, who then directs him to Lord Shiva. When he comes to Lord Shiva and starts glorifying him, Lord Shiva also becomes acutely embarrassed. He doesn't want to hear any of this glorification. And he tells Narad Muni that do not glorify me like this, because I am completely unqualified. I am not at all a devotee. And speaking about his own disqualifications, then he goes on to say, the residents of Vaikuntha, they are all glorious. And at length, he speaks about the wonderful qualities of the residents of Vaikuntha and how great is their devotion. And when Lord Shiva glorifies the residents of Vaikuntha, he happens to omit mentioning the name of Lakshmi Devi. So Lord Shiva is the husband of Parvati, Mother Parvati. So when Mother Parvati heard all the glorification of the residents of Vaikuntha, but there was no mention of Lakshmi, then she started speaking up. And she started glorifying Lakshmi and her devotion to the Lord. After hearing this glorification, Narad Muni got up in ecstasy and he wanted to rush to Vaikuntha to meet the residents of Vaikuntha and Lakshmi Devi to see how wonderful their devotion was. And then Lord Shiva caught hold of Narad Muni's hand and says, wait, wait, don't be in a hurry, sit down, come, come. See, instead of going all the way to Vaikuntha, which is far away, don't you know that there is Krishna right here in Dwarka? And he's accompanied by Rukmini Devi. And also, there is another great devotee of the Lord who is here within the universe, who is residing presently in Sutala Loka, one of the Patala planets, Patala Loka planets, the third. And his name is Prahlad. He is very, very dear to the Supreme Lord. He is the dearmost devotee of the Lord. Actually, he is dearer to the Lord than I am to him, than Brahma is, than his associates like Sankarshan or Vishwak Singh are. In fact, Prahlad is dearer to the Lord than even Goddess Lakshmi, the Goddess of Fortune. At the time when Lord Narasimha Dev appeared, and he tore apart the body of Hiranyakashipu, I was present, Brahma was there, Lakshmi Devi was there, and all the demigods were there, and we personally witnessed with our own eyes the indescribable great fortune of Prahlad Maharaj. Now, my dear Narad Muni, just try to understand the glory of this Prahlad. Now, you know that the Lord appeared as Vaman Deva, and he went to the court of Bali Maharaj, who was the grandson of Prahlad. Bali Maharaj's father was Virochan, and Virochan's father was Prahlad Maharaj. So Bali Maharaj was the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj. Now Bali Maharaj did not initially demonstrate any exceptional devotional quality, and he was going ahead with his kingly life. And despite him not being a devotee externally and manifesting those qualities, and despite his having committed many offenses, the Lord accepted the position of a doorkeeper for Bali Maharaj. He personally became his chowkidar, his gatekeeper, his watchman. And Lord Shiva started to explain that just look at Bali Maharaj. He had many faults. The first fault of Bali Maharaj was that he overturned, he violated the natural order and the system of this universe that had been established by Brahma. What was that natural order? The natural order was that the demigods should reside in the higher planets and they should rule those planets. The demigods or the demons should reside in the lower, the Patala Loka planets, and they should rule those planets. But what did Bali Maharaj do? Bali Maharaj conquered the universe. He invaded the higher planets. He removed the demigods from their position and put the demons in their place. So the demons were ruling the higher planets even, which is actually not proper. And he overturned and violated the natural system that Brahma, the creator himself, had set up. So this is a big offense. The second offense of Bali Maharaj was that he disobeyed the orders of his own spiritual master. Even though his spiritual master warned him not to give anything in charity to this dwarf brahmachari brahmana who had come, nevertheless, Bali Maharaj neglected his spiritual master's order and went ahead and gave the charity to Vamanadeva. Of course, at that time, Bali Maharaj did not know that this was the Supreme Lord. The third offense of Bali Maharaj was that he broke his promise. Vamanadev, the dwarf brahmachari, had asked for 3 steps of land, and Bali Maharaj had actually laughed at Vamanadev and said that although you are a brahmana and you are a brahmachari, but it seems that you are not very intelligent, because I am the lord of the whole universe. The lower planets, the earthly planets, the higher planets are all under my dominion. You could have asked for thousands of cows or some gold or a good brahmani or a good brahmana for a wife. I could have arranged all these things for you. But you are just asking for 3 steps of land and you are also only this small. But anyway, I will grant it to you. But when Vamanadeva took 2 steps, he covered the whole universe, and at that time Bali Maharaj had to offer his own body, his own head. And so Vamanadeva placed his third step on Bali Maharaj's head, but actually the promise remained unfulfilled because Bali Maharaj was within the universe and the third step was also within the universe. By the second step, Vamanadeva had covered the entire universe, So in other words, Bali Maharaj broke his promise to a Brahmana, which is considered an offense. Therefore, Lord Shiva explained, what was the reason for the Lord to become the doorkeeper of this Bali Maharaj who had committed so many offenses? Is it because he gave some things in charity even though they were incompletely given? What did Bali Maharaj give? He just gave two insignificant material worlds. And he gave his own insignificant material body. So these gifts in charity were too insignificant to merit the Lord becoming Bali Maharaj's servant and becoming his doorkeeper. Some people may say, Sanatana Goswami says in the commentary, that actually because the Lord became Bali Maharaj's doorkeeper, he had received greater mercy than Prahlad Maharaj. And therefore he was more fortunate than Prahlad Maharaj. But Lord Shiva, Sanatana Goswami says, he disagrees. He says, no, Bali Maharaj was not more fortunate than Prahlad Maharaj. In fact, the Supreme Lord became the doorkeeper of Bali Maharaj simply because of his relationship to Prahlad. Because Prahlad, being such a great devotee, a pure devotee of the Lord, was the grandfather of Bali Maharaj, therefore the Lord had mercy on Bali Maharaj. The Lord bestowed this incomparable privilege upon Bali Maharaj that he became his own doorkeeper. Then Sanatana Goswami explains in the commentary that somebody may say, well, this may not be the only explanation for why the Lord became Bali Maharaj's doorkeeper. After all, Bali Maharaj's father was the great devotee Prahlad. Prahlad could have made Bali Maharaj a devotee, and on the strength of his devotion, Bali Maharaj may have obtained the Lord. That's also a possible explanation. So Sanatana Goswami says, no, because Shiva, Lord Shiva gives a second example apart from Bali Maharaj, and that is of Banasura, who was wicked. If you say that Bali Maharaj obtained the Lord because of Bali Maharaj's devotion, why would Lord Shiva give the example of Banasura, who was not only not a devotee, but he was outrightly wicked by nature? He also was blessed by the Supreme Lord. Banasura was a great grandson of Prahlad Maharaj. Bali Maharaj had 100 sons, and Bana or Banasura was the eldest among them. The 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam contains a long description of Banasura. He was quite demoniac in the sense that he did not worship Lord Vishnu. He didn't care for the Vaishnavas either, nor for the Brahmanas. He was extremely powerful because he had obtained some benediction from Lord Shiva. One time when Lord Shiva was dancing his Tandava Nritya, Banasura, who had 1,000 arms, he played the drums. So 500 sets of 500 drums he played. Playing one drum is not the easiest of things, but he played 500 drums at the same time, and all in proper rhythm. And Lord Shiva was extremely pleased with Banasura because of this. And he said, what benediction do you want from me? And Banasura said, please protect my city, Shonitapur, and see that nobody can destroy this. So Lord Shiva said, Tathastu, so be it. Your city will become invincible. No one will be able to destroy your city. And Lord Shiva, from that day on, personally guarded Shonitapur. Now, because of Lord Shiva's protection and because of the benediction of getting immense power from Lord Shiva, Banasura became very arrogant and he started conquering all directions in the universe. So much so that all the demigods and the residents of the higher planets were also terrified of Banasura. And just like Hiranyakashipu was terrorizing everyone in the universe, so was Banasura. As Banasura became more and more powerful, he found there was no one who could stand up to him, who was any match for him. So after giving him some thought, he decided the only one who can be some kind of match for me is Lord Shiva himself. So he went to Lord Shiva and he challenged him that I have 1,000 arms and they're all itching for a fight, and I don't find any competition here, any worthy opponent. I've broken so many mountains, I've done so many things, but still my urge to use my arms, the power of my arms is not satisfied. So I want to have a duel with you. So Lord Shiva became very angry and he said, you're a rascal. A time will come when the right person will come who will be more than a match for you. But Lord Shiva could not kill him because he had given him the benediction to protect him. He couldn't go against his own word. So Lord Shiva could not kill him. So he said, one day somebody will come who will teach you a lesson. So when Banasura heard that there will be somebody in future who will be a match to me, then he was very happy. Okay, I will have somebody to fight. Then it so happened that he had a daughter who was very beautiful, whose name was Usha. And one day she dreamt of the grandson of Lord Krishna in Dwarka, Aniruddha. And she explained her dream to her friend Chitralekha, who had some mystic powers. And this Chitralekha went by her yogic prowess to Dwarka. She quietly entered into the room where Aniruddha lay asleep and transported him by her yogic powers, even as he was sleeping, into the room of Usha. And when Aniruddha awoke, he was surprised to see where he was, but he wasn't complaining also, because Usha was there. And they remained there for a long time before some complaints went to Banasura that now your daughter apparently has a companion inside. So Banasura was enraged. He came, and when he came in, he was astounded to see this young man Aniruddha, whom he felt would have been an appropriate match for his daughter, but now it was an affront to the prestige of his family and himself. That this, the way Aniruddha has come in here, is an insult. And he ordered his army to come and capture him. And he was surprised to see Aniruddha sitting there fearlessly as if there was nothing going on. And then Aniruddha destroyed thousands of soldiers. Finally, Banasura had to use some mystic weapon to capture Aniruddha. Meanwhile, word reached Dwarka. Through whom? Through Narad Muni. So Narad Muni said, you know what happened? He's there. Because everyone in Dwarka was anxious to know about Aniruddha's whereabouts. He was mysteriously missing, just disappeared. So then Narad Muni informed them, and Lord Krishna set out with a huge army with Balaram, Pradyumna, etc. And they all came to Shonitapur. And at that time, Banasura also confronted Krishna's army with his own army. And now Lord Shiva was bound to keep his promise. So Lord Shiva also came there to join in the battle along with his hobgoblins and ghosts. He also came with his son Kartikeya, who was the commander-in-chief of the demigods. And a fierce battle ensued. And Shiva was in the other enemy camp of Krishna. But what to do? He had a promise to keep. He had given a benediction and he was bound by his word. So Kartikeya was fighting, Lord Shiva was fighting, but Lord Krishna's army led by Balaram, Pradyumna and others wreaked havoc in the army of Varnasura. Lord Shiva was fighting. He let loose his Pashupati Astra, but Lord Krishna countered that with his own weapon. And then finally, Lord Krishna released a yawning weapon, and Lord Shiva had to keep on yawning, and because of the yawning he couldn't fight. Meanwhile, Banasura began to attack Krishna directly. Krishna cut off his arms. He left only four arms, and Banasura fled. And at that time Shiva also took the opportunity to depart. Banasura came back with reinforcements, and Shiva let loose the Shiva Jwara, which creates extreme cold. Krishna let loose the Vishnu Jwara, which creates, Shiva Jwara creates great heat, and Vishnu Jwara creates cold, so the two counteracted. And finally, when Krishna was about to kill Banasura, Shiva interceded on Banasura's behalf. And he folded his hands and came in front of Krishna, and he glorified Krishna, and then begged for the life of Banasura, because now it is a question of Lord Shiva's word. If Krishna killed Banasura, then Lord Shiva would prove to be false. So then Lord Shiva begged with folded hands, "Please protect this Banasura. He is my worshipper. I have given him a benediction." Then Lord Krishna was pacified. He said, "Oh Lord Shiva, now that you have come in front and you are asking, how can I ever refuse you? Of course, I would never have killed this Banasura, because I had given my word to Prahlad Maharaj that I would never kill anyone in his dynasty, any of his descendants. But now, because you have interceded on his behalf, and you are my great devotee, you are such an exalted personality in your own right, how can I refuse you? And all the more, I will bless this Banasura, that he should become your associate. And he should become free from old age and death. He will never become old and he will never die. And he will live in your abode as your associate." So then, coming back to Lord Shiva's conversation with Narad Muni, Lord Shiva says, "Just think of it. At least Bali Maharaj surrendered himself voluntarily to the Lord. But consider Banasura's example. He was so wicked, he even challenged me, who gave him the boon. Then he kidnapped Krishna's grandson Aniruddha. He bound him and assaulted him, tried to assault him. He also actually directly fought with Krishna. He didn't believe in the Supreme Lord. He didn't believe in Vaishnavas. He didn't believe in protecting the Brahmanas. He was not following the religious principles. So how wicked Banasura was. So the fact that the Lord excused Banasura's innumerable offenses, was it because I interceded and prayed on his behalf? No, my dear Narad Muni. The real reason is because Banasura was also connected to Prahlad Maharaj. So just see what kind of a great devotee Prahlad Maharaj is. That the Lord excused the offenses of even a wicked and offensive person like Banasura simply because he was connected to Prahlad Maharaj. Such are the glories of Prahlad." And Lord Shiva went on to speak like this, glorifying them more and more. And he said that Prahlad is more dear to Krishna than even the eternal associates of the Lord in Vaikuntha, like Vishwaksena and Garuda and Lakshmi Devi and so on. And then he chants some many beautiful verses also in glorification of Prahlad's devotion. So Sanatana Goswami explained, why is it that Prahlad, being a new devotee, a junior devotee, he just became a devotee, right, Prahlad? At the time when Narsingadeva appeared, it was just a question of one or two lives. So, why is it that the Lord considers Prahlad, who is a junior devotee, in our language, he considered Prahlad to be better than even his eternal associates, like Garuda, Vishwaksena, and even his own consort, Lakshmi Devi, who have eternally been devotees? They are not yesterday's devotees. They have eternally been devotees of the Lord with him in the spiritual world. And the Lord is considering a new devotee to be greater than them. What are the reasons for that? So Sanatana Goswami, paraphrasing Lord Shiva's words, explains there are two reasons for this. So the first reason is that the eternal associates of the Lord did not have to undergo any tribulations or difficulties to obtain my devotional service, Krishna's devotional service. Prahlad had to undergo so much of difficulty. He was tortured by his father in so many ways. Hiranyakashipu attempted to kill him in many, many ways. And he was only a small boy of 5, a child who is considered helpless. But still, he was subjected to unlimited atrocities by the most powerful demon in the universe, Hiranyakashipu. Prahlad quietly, faithfully tolerated it all without a complaint. And all the while, he was remembering the Supreme Lord. He never for a moment forgot the Supreme Lord. He never even begged to the Lord, please come and save me. He didn't even do that. He was happy in just simply remembering the Lord. So the eternal associates never had to go through the fire. But pure devotees like Prahlad, Lord Shiva explains, who become devotees in the material world, have to undergo so many difficulties. And the Lord becomes purchased by the sacrifices that these devotees undergo to become the Lord's devotees. And therefore, devotees like Prahlad are more dear to Krishna than even his eternal associates in the spiritual world, in Vaikuntha. The second reason that Lord Shiva mentions is that when Hiranyakashipu became so powerful because of the benediction of Brahma, he started committing many, many atrocities against the Brahmanas, against the Vaishnavas, and even against his own devotee son Prahlad. So the Lord was a little apprehensive and worried that because of this, it shouldn't happen that the devotees who are here in the material world lose confidence and faith in the process of devotional service, thinking that this devotional service is not able to protect us. Just see that the demoniac people have become so powerful that they have completely subjugated the devotees, and the devotees are only subjected to so many difficulties. So the Lord was worried that his devotees may lose confidence, that they may lose faith in the process and the power of bhakti. So therefore he blessed Prahlad that he would become a great devotee. In fact, that he would become the best devotee amongst all past and present devotees. Just so that all other devotees will get confidence. But yes, we should perform devotional service and we will be protected. This is the highest process, the best process. Also Krishna wanted to induce the other devotees in the material world to further increase their level of surrender following the footsteps of the Lord. So through the example of the Lord, the Supreme Lord has demonstrated to the whole world what real surrender and devotion is. And the Lord wants to encourage all of us here in this material world to try to surrender to the Lord like the Lord did. In other words, to increase our surrender and to increase our devotion for the Lord. So therefore, this is the reason why the Lord Himself has considered Prahlad as His dearmost devotee and better than even the residents of Vaikuntha. So we'll continue the discussion tomorrow because it's almost 7 o'clock. Any questions? We have time for just one question. Yes.
Told that following the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj will get devotion to Lord. So how on a regular level can we set ourselves that we are following in the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada or not following? So that we can, like immediately we are told that if we follow in the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada, how do we check ourselves? What is the second balance system that we are not following and following Srila Prabhupada?
Well, to start with, we must know what Prabhupada wants. Right? What does Prabhupada want from us? He wants us to become like Prahlad, right? He wants us to also become dear to Krishna by becoming wonderful devotees, by becoming surrendered, by becoming pure. So he wants us to follow in Prahlad's footsteps. So Srila Prabhupada has given us a whole program of how we can also become like Prahlad. So how do we know what Prabhupada wants? By reading his books, by hearing discourses based on his books, and trying to follow all that we have read and heard sincerely, with dedication and determination in our life. Then everything becomes clear. So it's a matter of just following what Prabhupada has already given us. It's all here. Okay, thank you very much. 7 o'clock. One question, last question.
Yes. So, since Bhagavatam says, Atrasarga Visharagastra, this 10 matter is there, and last one is Ashrami Krishna. And when it comes to devotion and devotee, bhakti is not Krishna. So, please, you can explain, give me a little more explanation in terms of clarification.
The word ashraya means shelter or refuge. So, in the 10 principles or 10 subject matters of the Srimad Bhagavatam that were mentioned in that verse, the ultimate principle, the highest subject matter, is ashraya, that is Krishna. And Krishna, the 10th principle, is the shelter of all the previous 9 principles. He is the ultimate principle of all existence. He is the root of all creation, material and spiritual. Correct? So he is the ashraya tattva. But when it comes to bhakti, Krishna's bhakti, that means bhakti of Lord Krishna, love, devotion, service to Lord Krishna. Who is the ashraya of that bhakti? Who is the shelter or the refuge of that bhakti? In whom does that bhakti for Krishna reside? Who is the reservoir of that bhakti? Who has that bhakti? The pure devotees. So they are called the ashraya tattva of bhakti. And Krishna is the vishaya of bhakti. Vishaya means the object of bhakti. So the devotees perform bhakti to Krishna. So the devotees are full of bhakti. They are the shelter of bhakti. And therefore Krishna is so attracted by devotees because they are the shelter, they are the ocean of the reservoir of bhakti, that he himself wants to become a devotee. The topmost devotee is Srimati Radharani. And therefore Krishna wants to know what is the love and the happiness that is experienced by Srimati Radharani in her devotional service to Krishna. So then Krishna comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he is Vishaya for bhakti. So he wants to understand what is it like to be the ashraya of bhakti, or the shelter or the refuge of bhakti. So he comes there, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we'll stop here. Bhaktaraj Prahlad Maharaj ki jai, Shri Narasimha Dev Bhagavan ki jai, Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premanande.